Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Touré, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We've got a full house, entourage, all your favorite things.
Very well.
So how was your weekend? I heard you did some traveling.
Yeah, I went to D.C. for the weekend, and my point for going there was actually for the Super Bowl, but I missed the Super Bowl.
You missed the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know the Super Bowl was in Atlanta.
Yeah, but I wanted to be around family and friends to actually get the experience.
That's good tip, Matt. That was Matt Sander.
Thank you,
for those
appreciate
who
it.
Don't know who that was.
Couldn't help but ask.
All right, we got a great show today. We got Elizabeth Hemeke. She's with Elavon. We got Mark Gorlin with Rhodey, and Matt Sander with Mint Ventures. And we're going to kick it off with Elizabeth. Welcome. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Elizabeth Hemeke is with Elavon. Tell us about Elavon. How are you serving folks?
Well, we're a top payment processor in the world.
The top?
Not the top, but we're up
top.
There. We're a top. Really specializing in payments solutions for healthcare, airlines, hospitality, small and medium businesses, and offices literally all over the world. Poland, Ireland, Madrid, London.
How'd you pick that order of countries? Is that like by your favorite countries?
Actually it is. I think Poland so far is my favorite country, but I love all the countries that we're in. But that's where I have people.
Yeah, so. People. And what's your role with Elavon?
I run an IT group that is focused on business requirements, software testing, automation, innovation, and transformation, just to get all the
Asians in there?
Yes.
Now, Elavon are you headquartered here?
Elavon is, yes, but we're owned by U.S. Bank, which is headquartered in Minneapolis.
And then Elavon is here because of the fintech scene? Is that Atlanta's got a pretty good fintech scene?
It absolutely does, but also Atlanta is sort of the magic hub for payments. We have a lot of, almost all of our big competitors are located here, First Data, Worldpay, Global.
And do you know why that is?
I think part of it is Atlanta is very close to the banking sort of epicenter, which is kind of in that Charlotte sort of southeast area.
Right.
And I think that helps a lot. And also our airport, even though it's incredibly overcrowded, it's easy access to Europe. Anywhere in the world, correct.
Now, recently Elavon has hosted a Girls Who Code event.
We did.
And that, how long have you guys been involved with Girls Who Code?
So that's a new relationship that U.S. Bank just formed, and we have in everywhere where we have technology centers around the country, so Minneapolis, Atlanta, Cincinnati, and a few others, we've started this relationship with them, and one of our HR partners is the one who really got it off the ground. We are always looking for talent, and so we figured we're going to start young. And
that's pretty young, like Girls Who Code.
Right.
Or how old?
Middle school.
Middle
school and high school girls. And they're actually they just started a new program that goes all the way down to the third grade. So we're gonna train them up young, keep them involved, and hopefully build the next generation of our workforce.
And that's important because historically there's not been a lot of women in technology.
There's in the STEM career field, so science, technology, engineering, and math. Recent statistics are women are achieving 57% of the four-year degrees, but only go into about 25% go into STEM-related fields. So we're very underrepresented.
Right.
There's a lot of reasons for that, and Girls Who Code and our partnership is one of the things that's going to try to help that.
Now, being a woman in technology, did you feel that kind of separation where you're like, where are all my women peers?
Oh, absolutely.
At some point, they stopped showing up in the classes?
I think it was really obvious to me when I started at Georgia Tech. And when I got into my core courses, which is the last 2 years, I was one of two women in most of my classes. Civil engineering is a pretty male-dominated field, as you can imagine. Heavy construction industry. And it was tough, but it was fascinating to me. I love to build things, so it was just natural. It's a natural fit for me.
Now, why do you think that women weren't continuing on that path?
Oh, there's It's not even a theory. It's been proven. Microsoft did a big study the last couple of years where they interviewed about 6,000 girls, and it really comes down to things that we know to be true. There's a lot of unconscious bias, the whole paradigm that boys are better at math and science than girls, and we're told that from a very early age. A lack of role models that are really visible to girls has a big impact. You know, not being around a lot of women that are in these technology fields. Recently, we've gotten a lot better about creating STEM clubs, so robotics clubs that are specifically for girls. I mean, they're also for boys and co-ed as well, but really trying to put a lot of emphasis on getting girls involved in very hands-on STEM-type projects and programs. And that's helping. And
at an earlier and earlier age.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think one of the other things that we've heard through the research and the interviews with the girls is they want to go into fields where there's parity in income and compensation between men and women. And unfortunately, you know, STEM is still between 79% and 82% of the salaries for women. That's how much less it is. So, but it's a much more lucrative field. So there's still a huge upside for women to go into STEM, of course. It's higher paying, higher starting salaries.
And
so
it's like 0% unemployment.
Yeah, yeah. Between now and 2030, the number of jobs that are going to, it's just going to be explosive.
Right.
Especially with automation and machine learning, artificial intelligence.
Now, is the kind of the evolution from STEM to STEAM by adding arts, was that part of that, was that to attract more women into?
I don't know the evolution of why arts was added. I think a lot of it has to do with the technology under which artistic presentations are now being made. So digital media, you know, movies, video games, that's all probably very centered in arts. So I think that's it's
but
just
that should
a,
capture a wider
right.
net.
It may, let's hope. But I'd still like to see more women get into computer science and tech and engineering.
Right. So now, tell us what happened at the event.
So we had about 65 or so girls join us. We had a panel with real live women in technology, and it was a very diverse group, which was exciting. In Atlanta, we have access to a lot of talent, so it's not probably as challenging as other markets to have a really diverse workforce, which is fantastic for us. The girls came in, they did a tour of our greenhouse, which is our technology innovation lab.
That's Elevon's own kind of innovation center lab?
Yeah, it's something that my team started about 2 years ago, and it really serves all of U.S. Bank. But since we're here in Atlanta, we have access to the Elevon product organization and our technology partners here. But we do projects for anyone, anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. We've done projects for Europe and the bank. Out of Minneapolis, so it's an asset that everyone can take advantage of.
And then this was the location of the mm-hmm. Girls Who Code event.
Yeah.
And then so they got to play with stuff.
Well, they got
was
to.
Was it hands on, or was it more like kind of learning and networking?
Yeah, the biggest thing or the biggest thrill for me is they got to see our robot Ellie, mm-hmm. who is a mechanical robotic arm that does EMV testing certifications. So it's a fully automated process. We have a patent, and it's my first patent, along with the rest of the team. Thanks. And so they got to see Ellie in action and did a tour of the lab. And then we did a design thinking workshop, where they got to practice having empathy for someone and then designing a solution to meet that need.
And what's an example of that?
So the challenge was create a better lunchroom experience for the person that they were partnered with. And so they had to ask questions, get information, and then based on what that person liked and didn't like about the lunchroom experience, they all took turns and they designed out a whole new, tables, technology, how they ordered their food, how they received their food, what were the options were. And we told them, they said, just go crazy. Just open your mind and don't think about what you have today. Think about what you could have and really try to keep that person's perspective in mind. And so that was a pretty fun exercise for them. And then the panel discussion that followed was pretty exciting. The questions were a little slow to start, but then once they had a few girls break the ice, then they just went crazy with the questions, and it was a lot of fun to share kind of our stories with them and really encourage them to stay smart and strong and bold.
Now, part of our work here at Business Radio X is we support the Women in Technology group. Is this affiliated with that?
It's not, but Women in Technology is something that Elevon is heavily invested in as well, yeah.
Now, I know in Women in Technology, one of the ways that they serve that group is by having job shadowing and mentoring. Is that part of this as well?
I think the Girls Who Code event is one where we introduce them to role models in STEM careers. Mm-hmm. And certainly, as we deepen our partnership with Girls Who Code, we would love the opportunity to do some one-on-one mentoring with the girls.
Have you had a chance to do that in your career?
Oh, many, many times.
Now, walk me through what that's like when a young person follows you around.
So it's not as much following me around at work, because that can get a little bit boring. But more it's about making time and getting together and to discuss questions or challenges that they're having. I do a lot of panel discussions, and I've done several with girls' groups. And one was sponsored by ServiceNow, and that was a lot of fun. It was a pretty young group of young women, young professionals, and I ended up staying for probably an hour and a half afterwards just answering questions mm-hmm. with a small group. And they really just, you know, they're struggling with the same things that I struggled with, and so I think it was encouraging for them to hear that they're not alone, that this is pretty normal stuff that we have to deal with.
And what are some of the issues that they're struggling with?
You know, I talked a little bit earlier about the unconscious bias. So people will make comments that when you hear them, you go, that sounded kind of like an insult, but I'm going to let it go. And these are all things that sort of undermine our confidence. I was in a meeting with a gentleman that I work with who I don't think he meant it at all, but he made a comment that I wasn't very technical. And I remember thinking about that going, let's see, I graduated from Georgia Tech in engineering.
You got a patent.
I've got a patent. I built a robot, and I have a technology innovation lab now, so I think I'm pretty, I think I'm technical enough.
How are you defining technical?
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
I'm a little unclear there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a lot of issues like that that we have to deal with, and a lot of concerns, too, about just career growth and how do you get ahead, and how can you be assertive in your career without being perceived as aggressive, which is a balancing act that we have to
right,
deal
so
with.
It's like they have to learn the hard skills, of mm-hmm. and which is difficult by itself, and then also the soft skills.
Right.
And that's what Girls Who Code, that they're trying to make the girl more well-rounded
giving them access to women in technology to see how it manifests itself in a real career setting, mentorship, and also just building confidence working with other girls on STEM-related projects, coding mm-hmm. or robotics, anything.
Now, what are some of the other ways that Elevon serves the fintech community here?
We're one of the sponsors of ATDC, which is Georgia Tech's incubator.
Right.
And that's a huge opportunity for us to really give back to the community, serving especially startups. Women in technology, of course, we're involved in. TechBridge is another one that we're very active in helping to sponsor that organization that really serves, you know, to join corporations with nonprofits to help them extend their reach in the community.
Right.
And then just, you know, trying to have just as much of a presence as we can in the community, whether it's speaking engagements or participating in networking events. Those are all ways that we give back.
Now, how do you see Greenhouse kind of their activity expanding in 2019?
We've got a pretty good roadmap looking at the Greenhouse really focuses in four areas. So applied research, and those are the things we're going to be looking at this year in that space are Internet of Things, so sensor-based technology, machine learning, artificial intelligence, virtual reality and augmented reality. All of these research efforts are really designed to teach us what that technology can do so that when we are presented with a problem from either our customers internally or externally, we know which technology might fit in creating a good solution. Proof of concepts, proofs of technology, and then we also have an infrastructure as a service so that if we have groups within the company that want to have some space to play around with some new software, some new technology, they can do that in a really safe way because it's separate and isolated from the rest of our network. So they have a little bit more freedom and flexibility.
So now what's the most rewarding part of the job for you?
I think in the innovation space, it's solving problems for people in a way that they would not necessarily have come up with on their own. No one person can understand or know all of the different technology that's available. So being able to utilize different partners that we work with to bring that knowledge in-house and then apply it for the greater good is pretty rewarding. And I think that as we can bring in more people into the lab, more girls, more clubs, startups, you know, anyone who might benefit from that kind of seeing kind of how that works, and we can help them solve problems, that would be really rewarding as well. And that's one of the things that's on our roadmap.
And then to execute that, that's why you have the partnerships with the Women in Code and groups like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we also have partners with groups like, for example, Infosys is the company that built the robot for us. Mm-hmm. And so they invest in the lab and help us solve problems. And then eventually, you know, the hope is that will turn into, you know, a deepening relationship with us and with the bank.
And then for Elevon, how do you see you guys growing? I mean, you're growing like crazy. But you need more talent.
We do. Right? We do. In the lab, we use a lot of interns from local universities, and we also have an intern that comes from as far as Boston. When he comes home for the summer, he returns every summer. He does a great job for us, and so we want to expand our internship program, which allows us to get access to college talent, and also to teach them about all the opportunities within U.S. Bank, again, creating that pipeline of the next generation workforce.
Are you bullish on the young people you're seeing? You excited?
We're very excited. They're brilliant, and they think in a whole different way than we do, and they're also exposed to so much of the new technology that is a little bit elusive to those of us that have been around for a while.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more about what's going on, what's is it for Girls Who Code? Can they contact you, or is it best to go through Girls Who Code?
Either way. They can either contact us through our public relations group, or they can go to Girls Who Code, and we can get connected that way.
And then Elevon's website is?
Elevon.com.
Good stuff. Well, yeah. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing your story today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. Hang with us. We've got a couple more guests. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, got Mark Gorlin, one of the founders of Rhodey. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us what's going on at Rhodey, guys. Your billboard is killing it. I see it every day.
I love it. A lot of people tell us that.
So that's been the key, right?
Absolutely. That and being on the show before, I think, if you had to name the two things that have propelled us.
Okay, we can use that now in our marketing. Thank you. Tell us about Rhodey. Tell us what you guys are doing and how you're serving folks, because it's a super innovative.
We like to think so. So for those that don't know, Rhodey matches up people with stuff to send with drivers that are already heading in that direction. So as we look out over 400 behind you, all these cars have all this empty space in them, and we put things in them. But we help you might get a couch to your sister's house, but we also help big brands like Delta and Home Depot and Walmart deliver things to their customers in sort of this ever-evolving race with Amazon to get things freer and faster to everybody at their homes.
Now, I think the first time you guys were on, it was you were meeting up at Waffle House's to do the switch. I think things have changed since that.
They've evolved a little bit since then. We love the folks at Waffle House, and you can still get a free waffle for downloading the app. But that came around as much for anything back, you know, 4 years ago when we launched it. People were like, I don't know if I want a stranger coming to my house or business. Right. When in reality, if you let randos stay in your house on Airbnb, putting golf clubs in your trunk is a pretty low bar out compared to that. But it gave a safe place for people to meet up with. So we still love the folks at Waffle House. But yeah, we have evolved. Our North Star is on the way delivery. It's people that are already going there anyway, where that frictional cost of going there can be the absolute lowest. So you go three streets over from your home and you bring groceries from Walmart, or you bring a drill from Home Depot, or you land at Atlanta Airport and somebody got separated from their bag and you take it two streets down from your own home. So that is sort of the goal there. But to get there, you've got to have a lot of people in the network because it's more episodic. It's not people that are just getting on-demand folks that are getting paid to do this. So you need a lot of people in the network. So that's what we've been building. And to get that sort of on-the-way network, you've got to have deliverability in all the places. So if on the way is our North Star, deliverability is the thing you've got to have in all the places that matters, because if you can't deliver everywhere, you're not a very good delivery service. So to get there, you've got to have all these active engaged drivers in the places you need deliverable. And then to get there, you've got to have a daily base load of demand. And we found the best way to do that is work with a lot of these corporate partners that have those kinds of demands everywhere. And we've been fortunate to work with some of the best brands in the world that are right here in Atlanta, folks like Delta and Home Depot and Coca-Cola, and we're thrilled to be working with all of them.
But the driver tends to do this just sporadically? Like, it's not like their job?
It is not their job. Ideally, it's someone who's just going to make $20 going up 400 from here going home, or someone that's going to make $80 going to the beach. I mean, there are people in the system that, you know, sort of do side hustles as a thing. So they might have an Uber, a Lyft, or Postmates on their phone
as
well.
And right,
or
they're
all of them. There's a lot of them that have all of them on there and sort of pick it. So, you know, it's our job for those folks to be the best option they can have. And we do that through a number of things. One, we'll pay more. And two, we're just more transparent. You see where you got to go, what you're going to make, because we want you to be doing it when you're going there anyway. Mm-hmm. And the ideal perfect state in the future, which we're getting closer and closer to since the last time I was here, is, you know, basically just getting a message on your phone saying, hey, do you want to make $20 on your way home? And we delightfully intrude in your day at that exact moment when you get paid for doing what you were going to do anyway.
And then are the people, is it typically in their daily commute that they use this? Or is it like, okay, like I know next week I'm driving to Orlando.
Yes, it is absolutely both of those. So we definitely, a lot of the needs that are driven by retailers and folks that need something within a town same day is the shorter drives that could be your commutes. It could be commute from the airport. It could be your commute from here. And there's a Home Depot around the corner and heading home. But also, if you know you've got a trip going somewhere, see, your sister's having a baby and she lives in Orlando and that crib needs to get there. Probably doesn't need to get there for the next 8 months. It doesn't need to be there tomorrow. It's going to be super expensive to package up and send. So rather than it bouncing through four trucks in an airplane that you probably don't want to do anyway, if somebody's heading there in the next 2 weeks, it's a lot safer in the back of my expedition than it might be anywhere else. We work with a big chandelier here in town, and they needed to get four chandeliers down to Destin, Florida. Posted them up. I think it was last year around spring break. I remember it because they needed to get down there. Someone was heading down for spring break. Picked them up that morning, took them down there. Same day delivery, 350 miles, probably 30% of what you would have paid to send through a traditional carrier. But you're also not paying somebody to package all that stuff up, all those materials, boxes, tape, packing peanuts that otherwise harm the environment and cost more money to send things. So it's friendlier and it's cheaper for the senders as well.
And now that you're working with these larger enterprise companies, so like I would go to a Home Depot, pick up something and take it to another Home Depot?
No, so you would go online. You can do it right here in Atlanta and order something online. A gig will pop up in the roadie system where drivers can offer to take it. It's their choice. They see where they need to pick it up, where they need to go, and how much they're going to make. The system picks a most appropriate driver, most likely going in that direction. You pick it up, you bring the drill to your house since you ordered it online, and the driver gets paid, and you get your item in the time frame you asked for.
So the driver is going to the store to pick up an item to give to a customer of the store.
That is correct. But oftentimes, I mean, if you think about it, we call it collaborative delivery because if you think about who's around any given store or airport, so you've got your employees. Mm-hmm. You got the people that are there heading home. You've got your customers, the folks that didn't buy it on Amazon and darkened your doorstep and showed up to shop your store. You've also got the local community. So it might be the lady at the Starbucks down the street or the dude at the Jiffy Lube. And when you combine all of these three groups together, you get this web of deliverability that has the same reliability as if you had a van outside to go deliver things. And that's what we've proven, and we're doing it for big companies like Dell and Home Depot all over the country, San Francisco, D.C., Atlanta, Phoenix, Orlando, Philadelphia. But we're also doing it in small towns, which is cool. You don't need to have an NFL team to have same-day delivery. So we're doing it in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in Eugene, Oregon, in Savannah, Georgia, and lots of other towns that might be smaller, but we're given the same service. Some towns that some of these larger rideshare services would need a map and a head start to find.
So now when you're working with, when you're going into one of these smaller towns, how do you, like it's a chicken and egg thing, do you have to get the drivers first? Like what comes first?
Well, the interesting thing is it is a marketplace, so they sort of have to come together to some degree, because if you get a bunch of drivers and you have no demand, and drivers
that's
are going to try it because there's nothing to deliver. And then if you have a bunch of senders sending stuff and no drivers, then you're getting nothing delivered and nobody's happy about that. So what we do is we do find this base load of demand with these bigger senders that we have. And we've got a pretty advanced digital playbook to put something in place, make sure we're recruiting drivers, get them in there. We understand what the flow of any given market is. And then you bring them up in tandem. It's kind of like eBay, Airbnb, and UPS all spun together in a bucket. So you've got to kind of bring them up in tandem. You add a few things to like the eBay marketplace, and then you know that group of people that want to look at Pez dispensers and Beanie Babies and antique cups are going to go on there. And then you keep adding products, and you keep adding people that are interested in those new products. It's sort of the same thing for delivery. You're just covering more regions and locales than you would otherwise. We've got over 120,000 drivers across the country. We've delivered to over 11,000 cities. That's a bigger footprint than Amazon Prime. Not the same volume, clearly, that's going through it, but the ability to scale up in all those places more quickly.
And then for the person that's the driver, they just have it on their app? Is that they just turn it on and say, I'm available?
Sure. So you can go to the iTunes App Store or Play Store on Android and download Roadie. And what they do is they fill in their information. And for local type of gigs, you'll get a smart alert when there's a gig somewhere near you. And you can, and we know which kind of car you have. So if it's a car keys, then you know a pickup truck or a Prius could handle it. If it's a couch, we probably don't need to let you know if you have a Prius. That wouldn't be a very pretty solution. Mm-hmm. So that will let you know. And if there are long distance trips that you come and take, if you go to Orlando often, you go to Charlotte, you wind up putting these in too. And anytime anything's going on those long distance gigs, it's going to alert you as those as well. Because much like the crib example earlier, it might not need to be there tomorrow. It might just need to be there sometime soon. The cool thing about Roadie versus a lot of these disparate courier companies that are, so if you have a Roadie in Atlanta and you have Roadie in Charlotte, where it's both works very, very well. Because it's this co-joined asset, not a bunch of individual couriers slapped together that aren't really connected, all of a sudden everything becomes deliverable in Greenville and Spartanburg and everywhere in between. We have somebody that works at the office that needed to send a couch to her daughter in Columbia, South Carolina, posted it at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. Within 20 minutes, I was like, I have a trailer. I'm actually heading up there now. Put it on the trailer. Within 3.5 hours, it was in her daughter's apartment.
Wow.
Now, it's like magic. It's like a teleporter.
Does it ever occur where it's going to multiple drivers, like the item, or it has to go from A to B? It can't go A to B to C to D.
Thus far, it's just one driver, and we've had folks that have done literally planned long cross-country trips and paid for their gas or otherwise by picking up roadie gigs along the way, pick a painting here, pick up a dog there, pick up whatever it might be.
So it could be a dog?
It can be pets, yes.
What about people?
No, we're not no people yet.
It's not a big Uber?
No, it's not Uber. There's definite advantages to just doing stuff over people. There are complexities with stuff that makes it a lot harder than people. If I drop you off one block from where you really need to be, you just get out and walk to where you need to go.
The packages
have never grown legs and walked that extra block, not once. And then there's just weirdness that sometimes comes with it. I mean, I'm a roadie driver, so I mean, I delivered flowers one time recently. You wind up going to the apartment complex. The girlfriend's name's not on the call box. You go in. Then the name's wrong again. You come back out. Then you go in, and then the dude that ordered him's in a creepy bathrobe on the third floor. That's difficult. It builds empathy for drivers and shows you how hard it is to complete all this stuff. So beyond having a service that can handle like the delivery, the customer service part of it's important, and the crowdsource part of it's important too for big retailers. Most assets that allow folks to do this now only go within 5 or 10 miles. Roadie will go if you get lost from your bag at the Grand Canyon, that's 234 miles from Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, and our drivers go deliver that stuff all the time. So we don't really care about distance. We don't really care about size. We can do keys and kittens and cupcakes. And when you have, like Valentine's Day coming up or Mother's Day for flower shops, that's our Super Bowl. When you have, planting season, that's home improvement retailer Super Bowl. So being able to flex capacity, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, when you have essentially unlimited drivers in a market, we're very easy to go up and down depending on what people need.
Now, you mentioned the customer service element of it. So I'm delivering the flowers or the couch or whatever. I have to be kind of a normal person when I'm doing that handoff. How do you train me, or how does that work?
Oh yeah, so you first of all, you go through a background check and make sure that you are a normal person.
And who I say I am.
Yes, and who you say you are. And we use the gold standard that most everybody else uses, Uber, Lyft, and everybody else for that. And you also get training videos of, like, how to be a driver and what you're supposed to do. And if it's a specific client, oftentimes you'll see, you know, something explaining, go into the store, wait at the customer service desk, everything to just make it better for you, for them, and for everybody. And when that works well, it's super nice. I mean, a few weeks ago, Walmart announced that they had started working with us doing grocery delivery, and now we're in about 3 states with them. And they, one of our drivers wrote to us, sent us a picture, and he had come to deliver something, and the Walmart associate brought him out a bucket of car cleaning supplies and just gave it to him, said, thanks for being a driver for us. That community aspect that happens within Roadie, it's very cool to see it happen and kind of get brought along to folks like Walmart and folks working with our drivers. That was a lot of the Waffle House. Waffle House is a community, mm-hmm. too. They, you walk in 4 days in a row, they know how you take your coffee by the 5th day.
Now, when you do the groceries now, are you actually, you know, buying apples, or they're just taking the Walmart is putting all the stuff in the bag and I'm just taking the bag and then delivering the bag of groceries?
Our drivers are just delivering it. So they show up at the Walmart, or maybe they're already there because they're also a customer, and the Walmart folks bring the groceries out, put them in the car, and they take them to your house. Mm-hmm.
And then when I deliver it, do I have to lift the couch into their house? Like, where does my responsibility end?
Roadies are drivers, not movers. So it's pretty clear in there that you need to make sure you have somebody there. Think about like your brother with a truck. So we run into this a lot. We work with Macy's in town. So if you need to buy something there, you could wait 2 weeks to have it set up with a professional, set up folks that they have to deliver it that you need to hit within a window on that Tuesday. And if you can't hit it, then you got to get bumped to the next Tuesday. Or you could set up for same day delivery and maybe you need to grab the other side of the chair and pull it into your house. Most people would rather have it for half the cost in today versus 3 weeks mm-hmm. from now for twice as much.
So then when the roadie driver gets there with the couch, though, it's my responsibility to get the couch in from the truck to the house?
Typically it is, but usually when you put the gig for the couch on there, you can put that you would maybe give a little money extra if they would help out or things like that. We have the great thing about it being a community and not this sort of lockjaw service is, I mean, we often have times where someone orders an older lady off gets a microwave and doesn't know how to put it up on the shelf or get plugged in, and the driver will do that for her. I mean, right. You know, you don't want someone having to carry a chair up, and our drivers are awesome. They genuinely take care of people. We had, I'll tell you one funny story if you want. We were talking to one of our clients we have now, and she worked there. But I was like, you know, you need to just try this out. And she's like, well, I do have some paint I need to pick up at the store and get to my house. I was like, all right, why don't you just use it? She goes, you want me to do a live demo? I was like, why not? Conference room sets up, go get the paint, take it to her house. Two drivers off her. One was going, I think, towards Ackworth or Conyers, and she's like, I want that because they're heading toward my house. So remember last year when the bridge burned down?
On
85. So it was that day. So she was a little late getting home. The driver picked up the paint, brought it to her house, and he got there before she did. And her dad was there with her son, and he had no idea what a roadie was. I thought it was one of her friends showing up with this bag of paint. Also, at the same time, her son's room upstairs was getting redone, and there was a mattress in the foyer when they walked in. So the guy pulls the paint out to bring it up. The dad thinks it's one of her friends. He's like, come on in, sport. Walks in. He's like, well, need a little help with this mattress. Can you grab a hand? So he picks it up. He's like, all right. He picks up the mattress. They're going up the stairs. She comes home, looks horrified seeing the driver carry this up there. But it's just the way that folks
right.
are.
He's there for dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Got a room now.
Now they're happily married. No.
So the culture is super important to create that sense of community where everybody's kind of helping each other. That's the spirit of Roadie.
It is. Our tagline was friendshipping. So people are going that direction anyway and helping people out, and you get paid a little something to do what you're going to do anyway.
Now, has it turned into the way you imagined it when you started?
It never turns the way you imagine it when you start it. I think we've learned a lot in terms of, like, you know, you're trying to build a marketplace. I mean, people asked me 4 years ago, what keeps you up at night besides your back? And the answer hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, it's trying to figure out how to build that marketplace in tandem. And one of the things I think we've realized is you need to be able to do it everywhere and say yes. So big folks ask us to go to, you know, start with smaller towns. And just because it's not a bigger town, I don't care. I mean, we're trying to build, you know, we're about 106 years behind UPS, but we're doing pretty good for 4 years into a product.
Now, talk about the technology aspect of this. There's a lot of technology to make this happen. It isn't just guys going, hey, let's move a couch for somebody. You know, there's a lot of bells and whistles behind the operation.
There is. It is incredibly complex, yet it tries to get boiled down to that simple text message that I talked about before. It's actually a lot of data science that is involved, more so than anything else, understanding where people are. When I first thought of the idea, I called it roadie route learning, which is like, where are all these people going and how do you attach stuff to them at that perfect moment when they're going there? But now our data science team is making all of the things that I said was real before actually real, which is thrilling for me. Looking at markets, we've got this slide, and it almost looks like a bunch of microbes on a petri dish, which is all these, like, imagine a bunch of pink dots and red dots, and it shows, like, how often things have been offered on and how many things have been delivered from areas. So we literally have, like, created tiles across the entire U.S. to determine what does it cost to get from any tile to another tile with a crowdsource model. How much would you need to pay for what size item? And we're gradually, as we learn more, that thing keeps getting iterated on literally every day. So that data science builds it, but then there's a massive amount of technology when you're combining the mobility assets of all of these people out everywhere, where they are at any given time, what their typical patterns are, and are they on it right now? Do you go to the lake every Thursday or do you not? And is that sort of, and are you going there this Thursday to, you know, take the laptop that Elizabeth might have left? So it's all of these different things that are put together that try to spit out something very simple to the community of senders and drivers.
Now, what's the kind of characteristics of a driver? What have you learned about the type of person that does this activity?
It's really everybody. I mean, it spans from millennials to retirees, and sometimes for different reasons. A lot of the community aspects within sort of the millennial crowd is like, I'm going to help my neighbor out and go there. And then retirees, they might not have anything else to do. It might be a side hustle for them after they've retired, or it might just be practical. Well, I'm going to the store. Why wouldn't I pick something up from there and bring it back home with me for somebody else?
Right.
So it really spans the spectrum.
So when you started, did you think it would be a certain type of person, or you thought anybody would do this?
I thought anybody would do this. I mean, I think a lot of technology out there winds up pushing people apart, and it has historically, really over the past 10 years. You think about Amazon. You can sit in your underwear at your kitchen table and order stuff online, and you don't have to go into a store. You go into your bank, and I mean, now there's like screens up where there should be tellers to talk to. I mean, everything is pushing you away from people. The idea of needing something done, needing something taken somewhere, not being able to do it yourself, and combining and helping some random stranger that you don't know by them going there too. And then you have these sort of collisions of humanity that are pretty cool. One of my favorite stories, and I'll tell it just because it's close to Valentine's Day, is this was a couple of years now. A lady named Joffy lived in California and had to take classes for 16 weeks in Chicago. And she was really missing her dog, Roxy. And so she set up a gig to bring Roxy out to Chicago, and there some drivers offered. And she picked this driver named Matt because he had good reviews and, quote, he was kind of cute. So he picked up the dog, brought it out to Chicago, dropped it off. They wound up having dinner. He went on to New York where he was going. As he was coming back across the country, he's like, I'm going to come back through again. You want to have dinner again? They do. Cards, texts, flowers, all this sort of stuff. They got engaged the next Valentine's Day, and now they have a one-year-old named Autumn.
And that's a side business for you, the dating service for
it's
roadie.
A roadie Tinder mashup that we've right. been working on. Yeah,
that's it. In the lab. So now, what's next for you guys?
You'll see some pretty big announcements coming out of us, both larger partners and some pretty interesting combinations of last mile with other modes of transportation that might allow you to be able to get anything you want anywhere in the country in the same day.
Now, are you still happy with the Atlanta technology scene? Is this working for you and getting you the talent and the resources you need to be successful?
Yeah, Atlanta is unbelievable. I mean, it's this is my fifth startup, and I wouldn't go anywhere else and do it. This is both the community at large here. It's interesting being in Roadie, which is more of a consumer startup. I mean, my past has been Cabbage, which is fintech, and clearly there's a lot of assets here that are helpful to that. Cybersecurity is great, but you know, you just see so much investment both from the local government, the business communities, Techstars Atlanta being here, ATDC, all the incubators, a lot of the corporate entities here. I mean, everybody's doing innovation labs, but they're also partnering with startups when they know that they can't do that all in-house. It just, a lot of the DNA just isn't there. They don't move fast enough. It's just hard. But they're really taking efforts to work with some of the local communities. We benefit from that, from some of the bigger names I've mentioned. And I think they're getting benefit out of it, and they're also investing in the local community like that. So
awesome. You think that's unusual? A lot of the other cities aren't having that kind of enterprise and startup combinations that are happening here?
I think you've got some cities that are definitely doing it. I mean, you've got like the Salt Lakes and the Cincinnati's, and you've got even Birmingham. You've got smaller towns that are doing different things to build up. But I think Atlanta has done a great job of co-joining a lot of those efforts. I mean, the University System of Georgia's created this FinTech Academy that's sort of hitting towards that group. I mean, Techstars is taking lots of companies and really almost supercharging, you know, where folks before would be like banging around Atlanta looking for money under placemats. I mean, they've organized it in a way where the pitches get better, you understand your business better and can explain it better. I mean, my dad was still an entrepreneur, but I mean, being able to tell your story to groups of people is harder than one might think. Mm-hmm. And almost having an academy that allows folks that haven't done that to figure out what's important and what stories to tell is half the battle. And then having a business community that invests in funds to get into the startup community that funds incubators, you just get a mindset where you're more likely to say, maybe, versus a lot of places where you just default to no because, you know, what's the old saying, like nobody gets fired for hiring IBM, but everybody gets fired for hiring Roadie.
Exactly. So if somebody went to learn more about Roadie, be a driver or be a store, like it's not just big stores, right?
No.
Any store can call you guys up and you can be kind of their delivery arm or be a part of their delivery system.
We work with small businesses all over, Conyers, Nissan, florist shops in town, printers, companies big and small that need stuff delivered. Some we've found on our own and some that have just found us and realized it's just a better solution than having a fleet of trucks that you don't want to pay $300 to crank up to send one item out. You go to roadie.com, roadie.com, or you can download, if you're a driver, download the app again on the iTunes store or on Google Play Store.
And what do you need more of right now? More drivers, more stores?
More
of everything, more time?
More time, more of it all.
That'll be your next venture, create more time for people.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a good one. I'd buy.
All right. So roadie.com for more about everything. And if you need a package delivered or you're traveling, call them up, right?
Yeah, just download the app. You can send some. I'm a customer both sides. I drive and I use it all the time.
So like what if I was going to Orlando dropping off a computer, how much money would I make about for that?
I would have to look it up on there, but I mean, you could make...
Is that $10 or is it...
No, you probably make $70-$80 or something.
Wow.
It just depends. I mean, there's certain things, if they have to go across the country and they're not urgent, it's better to use other things. I'd be the first to tell you that. But if you got something that's urgent, needs to get somewhere immediately, you really can't beat it. I mean, I've left my laptop or my backpack at places around town here, and it literally can get to me faster than I could go retrieve it and come back by using Roadie. You set it up there. There's drivers on stuff in this town in literally 3 minutes or less.
What's the most expensive? Like, what's the most the drivers made for one trip?
It would probably be a combination of trips where folks went across the country, but there's folks that made $1,500, $2,000, like winding up picking up multiple gigs and string them along going across the country. I've got a friend in New York who she told me that she needed to send paintings out to her mom in California. I had no idea this was going on. I don't even know what she paid, but it went for literally from New York to L.A.
Wow. Good stuff. Rhodey.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, for sharing your story. The closer, the headliner, Matt Sander with Mint Ventures. Tell us what's going on, Matt.
Well, first let me congratulate Mark. I'm a huge supporter of crowdsourcing anything. Mint Ventures is actually investing in an app that will crowdsource in-store merchandising, but that's a conversation for another day. So Mint Ventures was created to help basically employers become better employers, better companies. I worked for a company called Insperity, which is a professional employer organization, PEO, and realized there are a lot of square pegs being forced into that round hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, since there are over 700 PEOs in the world, I would step out and be more of a consultant and be truly agnostic when I meet with a client. And that way I can be more of an advisor to them rather than a salesperson. So
walk me through what's the pain I'm having where I'm calling Mint Ventures?
The pain you're having is that you might have trouble keeping good people. You might have trouble getting good benefits for those people. You might have trouble just developing a culture where people want to work.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, people start measuring their next job based on what they'll be able to impact in that company, how they'll be able to impact society. So the old days were of my dad, where you work somewhere for benefits, or even in my generation where you work because it's the best salary, I don't say they've gone the way of the dodo, but they have definitely been diminished. This generation coming up, this Gen Z and millennial, look to where they can have an impact. And a lot of companies today just don't know how to develop that culture. They don't know how to even start to understand that culture. So PEOs are a really good way to help you sort of develop a big company benefit package, but with the right PEO, they'll come in and help you develop a culture and a strategy that goes beyond just making sure their paycheck hits the bank every payday.
And then when you're saying culture, how are you defining that?
That's a very good question. I don't know if anyone's ever actually defined what culture is. If you read culture studies, it's the leader of a company really helps define the culture from the top of the organizational structure all the way down to the worker bees, as they like to call them. So a lot of times the organizational leadership doesn't know what their culture is, so they do culture studies, and culture studies can get rather expensive. They can also get rather time-consuming. So a lot of PEOs, like Insperity, like Trinet, like ADP Total Source will come in and do these culture studies to help you define what your culture is. And then
culture is like branding.
Yeah.
You got one whether you're trying to do one
exactly,
or not.
Exactly. Culture, every company has a culture, whether it's defined or whether it's by default. And most companies today are trying to get out of the default culture and move into a defined culture. But since no one can really define culture, it's kind of hard to build a culture. Excuse me.
But it's not like, I'm going to just throw a foosball table in the middle of the room and a kegerator and say, hey, that's my culture, right?
Oh, yes. And you'd be surprised the number of businesses that think that's a great way to define culture. I know I was prospecting a couple of summers ago and came across a company that had converted their conference room into a nap pod room. I thought, well, I need to work here. So I can take a nap in a nap pod pretty much every day of the week, then that's where I want to work. But those are more tactical applications of trying to build culture than really trying to define it. So once you bring in someone like a professional employer organization that they have built cultures at companies, and they've built cultures at companies that run the gamut of industry, it's a lot easier to have someone who does it every day than you as the business owner or the leadership team trying to define what culture is when you really have no idea what culture is.
Now, when you're building a culture, part of it is to attract the right people to the organization. Part of it is to be authentic and true to your mission and the impact you want to make. How do you kind of marry those?
Well, that's a very good question. It's not only trying to attract the right people, it's also trying to keep the talent that you have. It's much easier to keep good programmers or good salespeople if you have the kind of culture that, that keeps them in their job than trying to constantly replace people. So how do you marry those two is you get a really good dialogue that goes between leadership and employee. So that the leadership is actually listening to their employees, not just forcing their definition of culture or their definition of workplace environment onto their employees. I think 40 years ago, that's the way it was. I can remember back in the day when IBM decided everybody's going to wear either a gray, a black, or a blue suit because that's the culture they wanted. Which, if you're in the blue, black, and gray suit business,
it's good for
that
you.
Was good for you. So you liked it, but over time they realized that trying to force, again, round pegs or square pegs into round holes was not the best way to run a business. Which, when you work for a specific PEO like I did for a number of years, it's sometimes good to step out and sit down with a business owner and say, what do you need? Let's find out who has that for you. And if what they need is someone to really help them drive culture, or they need better benefits, or they just need a better relationship with their vendor, then coming in as an advisor instead of a salesperson is a much better advantage for those people.
Now, when you're building this culture and you're working with employees, do you find that like young people want to have an employment kind of career that isn't that 20 years, 30 years with one company, that they're purposely want it to be kind of, I want to learn what I can learn here. I want to get some projects under my belt. I'm going to move to this company in a year or two, and I'm going to learn and grow from there. And I'm, you know, they're just kind of cobbling together a career that suits their needs, and it has to be flexible to what they want to do.
Right, right. I believe this is why the gig economy is growing at the rate it's growing, is because the generations that are coming up behind mine don't want to be locked into a career like their parents were for 25 or 30 years. I know when I graduated from college in 1990, my dad had worked for AT&T for 27 or 28 years at that time. And I said to myself, I do not want to work for the same company for 27 or 28 years. Now, I've averaged about 3.5 or 4 at companies. But when you look at millennials and Gen Z on LinkedIn, you'll see somewhere between about 6 and 18 months is their average expectancy at a job.
Right, but if you know that going in, can't you build jobs that are 6 to 18 months that are either I'm going to teach them and they're going to go, or I'm going to teach them and maybe we'll have a second project together and it'll go another 6 to 18 months.
And that's where someone who does this every day that helps companies define what job description should be and how jobs should be worked out become a huge advantage to companies that use a PEO, because they will go in and help you define that work environment. It's new, so people don't sit around thinking, well, I'm going to hire this person and I know they'll be here for 6 months. Well, if you're defining the job and you're setting up the parameters of the position where you know it's a 6 to 12 month job, then you understand that the person you're hiring is probably only going to be there for about 12 months. So you can build your culture so that people come in and say, you know, I really liked working with the people I liked working here, but the job I'm doing is really about over. So what else can you do?
Right. If it's a fit, then they can kind of renegotiate and then come up with another plan for a period of time that works for both of them.
Yeah, I fully anticipate that in the next 10 years, just about every position out there will be a gig position in definition, if not necessarily by accident. I think people will say, you know what, I'm going to hire this person. I'm going to keep them here for about 18 months. If we like them, we'll find another position inside our company. Now, I don't know long-term what that'll do to corporate structures and building experience inside the company, but it is what it is. So you might as well figure out how to plan around it.
So now your prospect is who? Is it the small to mid-sized company?
Right. I love companies that are between about 5 and about 150 employees. They're still at that stage where they don't have that professional HR leadership. If they do, they're hamstrung or limited because of the resources of a company with 100 employees. It's nothing like the resources of a 5,000-employee company. I mean, U.S. Bank has
75,000.
75,000. So That's a typical client of my wife is about 50,000. So they have the resources to do things for their employees that a 100 employee company doesn't. When you bring a PEO to the table, you bring the resources of a 75,000 employee company that can be leveraged for a 100 employee company and help them run like they're a 75,000 employee company, but still get the intimacy that comes with knowing that when the boss, like Mark, walks in every day, you know that the work you're doing is impactful for Mark's company. So I'm a huge fan of Rhodey, by the way.
Now, for you, you're trying to get in front of more small to mid-sized business owners?
Right. I look to try to meet with 3 to 5 a week. Mm-hmm. And the goal there is just to find out what's going on. What do they need as opposed to what do they want, and figure out how to fill the need as well as how to satisfy the want. So,
and then the pain they're having is that they're just started growing, or they're maybe have a lot of turnover and they can't figure out why.
Yeah, turnover is a big problem, especially in a zero employment economy like we have. It's very easy for guys to jump ship when the grass may look green on the other side. So keeping employees on payroll and staff is become a huge burden for a lot of these smaller companies because they don't have the resources to keep me from leaving company A with 50 employees and going to work for Mercedes-Benz across the street because they have the resources to attract me. So this gives them the ability to work with someone who every day helps you retain that best talent and helps take A player or take B players and make them A players and C players and make them B players. So that's the goal of what these companies try to do. And as an advisor and a consultant to these employers, I help them figure out, all right, which one is best for you, because Insperity may be great for a technology firm, but if you're in hospitality or if you're in transportation, it may not be the best fit for what you do. So that might be another company out there.
And if somebody went to learn more?
They can call me. I still do things the old-fashioned way.
On a phone.
On the phone. It's crazy difference.
Dial you up.
They can call me at 678-491-1640, and we'll set up some time to speak.
Or connect with you on LinkedIn.
They can connect with me on LinkedIn under Matthew Sander.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Appreciate it.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.